ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧರ ಶಿವ ಸದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ
Supreme source of knowledge. The four castes, the three worlds, the four orders, the past, the present, and the future are all severally known by means of the Veda. Sound, touch, color, taste, and fifthly smell are known through the Veda alone. Their production is through the Vedic rites, which in this respect are secondary acts. So as we were discussing this morning is that it's only actually through the Veda that they can be understood. One is the act by which you can actually understand what the senses are perceiving, you know, is only through the Veda, right? Because you have a system that's given by the Lord, and if you follow that, then you'll do. If you keep your eyes closed, you can't see. So you have to follow the rules, right? Open the eyes, you can see things. So technically, it's only according to Veda. Now, that would be, you're untrained, so you don't know that that's why it's happening. Now, if someone is trained, right, then they can appreciate that this is the fact. So then the Veda becomes authority. So the Veda being authority, then you actually see properly, right? Then you understand how the senses, everything are functioning, right? So what are the castes, what are the worlds, what are the orders, the past, present, the future, what actually comprises of, then one must base it on the authority of the Veda, right? And then from that authority, you apply that, then when you see, you'll see properly. Because as we mentioned, we were discussing before, is that something is seen that's reflected on the intelligence. The mind being close to the intelligence then is able to perceive that. So then, depending upon how you interpret it, is how the intelligence then takes the form. Does that make sense? So taking the form doesn't mean specifically the physical form, but what you consider it is. Right? It's something, like the example of the chair, it's something for sitting, or it's something that you would like to buy, or you wouldn't like to buy, or, you know, whatever it is that you would consider it. What is the condition that you would consider it? That's then how you're going to look at it. Does that make sense? So therefore, you want to have the authority of the Veda to establish that point. Right? Otherwise, then you'll have so many other reasons that you see things, how you see things and everything. But the problem is that your seeing of them may be incorrect. Right? Because facts aren't enough. Right, even to properly perceive the facts, you have to do it in the proper way. But facts aren't enough. You have to actually know what it's for. The fact is there, but is it for? How is it engaged in Krishna's service? Is it your duty to engage in Krishna's service? How it should be engaged in Krishna's service? So that is all gained from the Shastra. Right. So that's the final point. Right? Does that make sense? Interesting is here, because it doesn't get into detail, right? Because this is Dharma, this is not Shankhya, right? Or Vedanta. But notice that it says the supreme source of knowledge, so it mentions all the different things you'd work with, and then the senses. Right? So that's what's going to be done. Now the Vedic rites, they're secondary, because they're only, by performing them, you're following the laws that the Lord gave. That's why you're getting the result. Not that the work itself gets the result, right? The work gets its result because it's being done by what the Lord says should be done. Does that make sense? It means the brahmachari studies. He gets result because by studying, that's how knowledge is gained. It's by following the rule of the Lord, and being a student, he's supposed to study. That's how he learns. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. Right? So then it's pious, it gets good results, so the understanding's proper, the application is proper, everything's proper. Otherwise, it won't give the proper results. The eternal law of the Veda upholds all created beings. Hence, I hold that to be supreme, which is the means of securing happiness to those creatures. Right? So everything is maintained by following, if you see according to Shastra, therefore you'll act according to Shastra. That's what maintains the universe, right? The Lord's maintaining, but he'll maintain it according to how you reciprocate with him. You follow his laws, the maintenance is nice. You don't follow, it's not so nice. It's simple like that. You know, if one says no, but it should be better than that, that's called the spiritual world. You know, you're still not satisfied with that, go back to Godhead. Everything's really nice there. Also, he says, hence I hold that to be the supreme. Generally, he's just saying, this is what it is, that's what it is. Brahma said, Swayambhu said like this. Very rarely says like that, hence I hold that to be supreme. Right? And this is Bhrigu. So he's considered the best of the Brahmins. Right? And so he's saying that, so you have to accept it.
That means you speak from personal realization.
Yes, from personal realization. And just also, the point is, if this is his realization, this is his opinion, then no other Brahmin can claim something else. Right? Command of armies, royal authority, the office of a judge, and sovereignty over the whole world. He only deserves who knows the Veda science. Right? So in other words, anybody who has a post of being leadership, you know, especially then leading people, then should only have that. He only deserves it who knows the Veda science. If you don't know the Veda, then they're not qualified. As a fire that has gained strength consumes even trees full of sap, even so, he who knows the Veda burns out the taint of his soul which arises from evil acts. Right? So the tree is full of sap, it doesn't burn very well. But the fire will still burn it. Right? Right? You understand? Sap, because sap when it's dry, it burns really well. But when it's wet, it doesn't burn so well. Right? So therefore, even things that are difficult to get rid of are gotten rid of by knowledge of the Veda. Right? So then that means actually, knowledge of the Veda means actual knowledge of the Supreme Lord. You have to know Vedanta. Because it's already been established before that the Veda, the actual purpose is Vedanta. Right? To know the Supreme, yes.
In the translation here, the translator has placed evil in parentheses. Does this mean this is coming translated by moralists who is thinking evil acts give a taint, whereas the text is actually meaning all acts give a taint?
It can be. It can be. Or it can be the word that's used, so there's a context or an inference to it. So because of the poeticness, it's inferred like that. It could be that. Who knows? Because many places he puts it in, because grammatically then it's there. At the same time, is what word they use many times also is their own understanding. Because we would know is that the evil acts will be going, but here is the point is even good acts you can get. So you could take an evil acts, meaning you're worried about the religious principle, but all acts, then you're worried about the principle of liberation, right? And then you're taking anything mundane against bhakti. In whatever order a man who knows the true meaning of the Veda, science, may dwell, he becomes, even while abiding in this world, fit for the union with Brahman. Right? So it's true meaning, it doesn't matter what varna or ashram he's in, if he understands this science, then he's actually, has the qualification to be situated on the transcendental platform. Right? Because it says true meaning of the Veda. Because it's already said here that the Vedic rites are secondary. Right? So in other words, having the proper understanding, that's the first. The ritual is the support of it. Right? Even forgetful students of the sacred books are more distinguished than the ignorant. Right? So, in other words, the ignorant have never even read them. So they've read them, so they'll get understanding, they'll get some faith, they'll get that. Though they may forget, but they still have gained that faith. They don't remember what it said. So if you ask, they can't necessarily explain it. But they have gotten that benefit. Right? They've been purified, they've gotten the proper faith. Right? So it's better than someone who hasn't read at all. Those who remember them surpass the forgetful. Right? Those who possess a knowledge of the meaning are more distinguished than those who only remember the words. Men who follow the teachings of the text surpass those who merely know their meanings. Right? So in other words, you should read, remember, and understand, and practice. Austerity, so that's the point, is that knowledge must be contemplated and practiced, because you won't understand unless you contemplate, right? And then you're not going to get realization unless you practice, right? And someone who has practiced, then they're going to do that as their lifestyle. Austerity and sacred learning are the best means by which a Brahmin secures supreme bliss. By austerities, he destroys guilt. By sacred learning, he obtains the cessation of birth and death. Right? So he becomes purified by performance of his duties and by having the actual transcendental understanding. Then he is freed from the cycle of birth and death. Right? So the actual understanding, Vedanta, means you go back to Godhead.
Sacred learning means to study the Veda.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it doesn't mean I'm a, you know, how you say, you know. Yeah, it won't be Time Magazine. Yeah. So austerity means performing the duties of a Brahmin, because it mentioned before that that's what austerity is. So for a Brahmin, it's studying and teaching. So he studies, and he studies sacred learning. Right, because he could study and teach anything from the Veda, but specifically sacred. So what's the transcendental? Okay. The three kinds of evidence, perception, inference, and the sacred institutes, which comprise the tradition of many schools, must be fully understood by him who desires perfect correctness with respect to the sacred law. Right. So, interesting to note is also here, Bhrigu is only mentioning three, not four. He's not accepting comparison as its own. So perception, inference, and the sacred institutes. So sacred institutes will mean the Shabda, the Veda itself. Right? He alone and no other man knows the sacred law, who explores the utterances of the sages and the body of the laws by modes of reasoning not repugnant to the Vedic lore. Right? So he has to do this in a way that's proper, how the Vedas describe it should be done. Right? How it should be appreciated. He'll understand. No one else. Right? So in other words, by speculation you can't understand. In other words, academics won't be able to understand because they're not going to a teacher, they're not practicing, they're not applying, they're not doing any of these things, so they won't understand. It's not just because you've read it and discuss it, therefore you know it. Riti, as was stated earlier, every twice-born man who, relying on the institutes of dialectics, debate, treats with contempt those two sources of the law, right, meaning Shruti and Smriti, must be cast out by the virtuous as an atheist and a scorner of the Veda. Right? And the scorner of the Veda, I forget what it was equal to. I can't remember if it was... Oh, is it equal to intoxication? Right? Because intoxicated means you're in ignorance and you do things you don't understand. So here you're acting in that way, it's as good as. The Veda, the sacred tradition, the customs of virtuous men and one's own pleasure, they declare to be visibly the fourfold means of defining the sacred law. Right? So this means, you know, and one's own pleasure means according to the law, which one works. You know what I'm saying? Well, you can say, no, but you should be able to do anything you want. But people don't apply that in their life. You don't drive down any street you want in any direction you want or on the sidewalk, or you don't go into a restaurant and order something not on the menu. You know, you can't do these things, right? You mean your freedom is to choose within what is available, right? So in other words, what the sacred text gives, what the acharyas give, that within that you choose, right? And if you don't like those, then there is another choice, a fifth choice, right? It's called antyaja. You're free to choose it. You know, then you know, sky's the limit, right? Well, actually, sky's not the limit, you could say. Hell's the limit.
Gavadak Ocean's the limit, just above the village planets, just above the Gavadak Ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
Gavadak's the limit.
The Gavadak's the limit, right? Unless they're a Buddhist, then they end up in the mud, right? You know. Thus, the acts which secure supreme bliss have been exactly and fully described. Right now, how he's describing it, we can see that supreme bliss is not the heavenly planets. Otherwise, the secondary acts would have been more important. And he's saying cessation of birth and death. So that means not heavenly planet. Right? And because before he's given the point of that renunciation, Kridandi means the body, mind, and words are engaged. While the impersonalists don't see that. So in other words, you're going to have to go to worship the Supreme Lord. Right? So that's the supreme bliss. In other words, you'll attain to transcendence, right, if you follow Shastra as the basis of your activity. Okay. Now the secret portions of these institutes proclaimed by Manu will be taught. Now the secrets. Okay, so the secrets are how to deal with doubtful points. Because otherwise the secret has just been explained.
Yes.
Right. If it be asked how it should be with respect to points of the law which have not been specifically mentioned, the answer is that which Brahmins who are Shishtas propound shall doubtlessly have legal force. Right? Shishtas are gentlemen who know and practice the Vedic conclusions and culture. What they say, that will be applied. In other words, the Veda is there. And if it's something that's not covered, Shishtas, who are following the Veda, they can make the decision, not people who don't follow. Right. Those Brahmins must be considered as Shishtas who, in accordance with the sacred law, have studied the Veda together with its appendages and are able to adduce proofs perceptible by the senses from the revealed texts. Right? Does that make sense? If it's perceptible by your senses, means they can explain it so you can see it. You can understand it. Right? And that, what they're explaining, is coming from Veda. That's Shishta. Right? But if it's coming from somewhere else, or using some other authority other than the Veda, you know, that when we say Veda, that means Bhagavatam, Gita, Vedanta, Upanishads, like that. But if they're using something else, you know, some modern kind of consideration like that, or it's all speculative and it doesn't actually have any value, you can't understand really what is being meant, you know, it sounds great, then it's, that's not a Shishta.
Can we say that Shishta is some Brahman who has not a realization?
Basically that, or it means a devotee who has realization. That's the point. In other words, somebody with faith, that's what we mean. They've studied, they have faith, then that would give. Otherwise it just becomes confusing. Riti, able to adduce proofs perceptible by the senses indicates having the ability to explain the scriptures so they're both understandable and practically applicable. So if it's a matter of they can't understand how it's practical, and so therefore they say it's not practical, that's not a Shishta. Because to make it practical for you means it's practical for them. whatever an assembly consisting either of at least 10 or of at least 3 persons who follow their prescribed occupations declares to be law, the legal force of that one must not dispute. Right? An assembly is a group of qualified gentlemen, as being said before. So 10 shishtas together, at least 3. Right? Like that. I mean, it's bigger, because in other words, if the king is deliberating on something or there's some big thing, then he'd ideally have 10. But if not, at least 3. You know, if it's something more private, he'll deal with 3. If it's something more, you know, the state and more common things, 10. You know, or something that the public is worried about, then 10. Mm-hmm. But does that make sense? Or if it's something that needs very, very advanced understanding, then 3. Like that. You know what I'm saying? Or it's something that can't be known by the public. Like that. How the king will have to be dealt with. You know, so it's something more delicate, so then 3. 3 persons who each know one of the 3 principal Vedas. So here's the 10. 3 persons who each know one of the 3 principal Vedas. A logician, a mimamsaka, one who knows the Nirupta, one who recites the institutes of the sacred law, and 3 men belonging to the first 3 orders shall constitute a legal assembly consisting of at least 10 members. So that's a standard legal assembly. Right? 3 principal Vedas, Rig, Yajur, and Sama. Logician is one who knows Nyaya. Mimamsaka is one who knows the 6 systems of Vedic philosophical understanding, so they can get the proper. One who knows the Nirupta is a person learned in the treatises on vocabulary, describing word meanings, roots, and derivations. Right? Because otherwise, then there may be a point, well, what does this word mean? Or someone's trying to not use it properly. So they say, no, this word in this text can only have these options. One who recites the institutes of the sacred law is a person who knows the Dharma Shastra, and 3 men belong to the first 3 orders, respectively a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, and a Vaishya. But that means there's somebody who follows, you know, has studied and follows their occupation properly. Right? So all of these persons. One who knows the Rig Veda, one who knows the Yajra, and one who knows the Sama Veda shall be known to form an assembly consisting of at least 3 members and competent to decide doubtful points of the law. Right, so in other words, if you only have 3, it's not that you take, you know, the Brahmin, the Kshatriya, and the Vaishya, or the Nyayas, and the Nirukta one, and the like this. No, it's the ones who have studied the Veda, because it mentions with their appendages. So if you're taking the Veda, that means the Veda and it's, so that means the Upanishads and these elements like that. But it also means they know all the other things, because the Veda, Vedanga, Upanga, they're all the Vedic Angas, like that. In other words, the 14 books of Vedic knowledge. Well, okay. Even that which one Brahmin versed in the Veda declares to be law must be considered to have supreme legal force, but not that which is proclaimed by myriads of ignorant men. Right? So even if you can't get 3, if one learned person says something, that has more value than myriads of ignorant men. Do you mean any like ballpark figure for a myriad? Very large, okay.
It's even taken as 1,000 or a million.
1,000 or a million, okay. So it means a very large.
Myriad also means various. It has the element of
various
differentiation.
Okay. Okay, so lots of varieties of
yeah.
All and sundry.
Yeah, exactly.
Any large number you might like to come up with.
Okay, it's included in myriad. Okay. Even if thousands of Brahmins who have not fulfilled their sacred duties are unacquainted with the Veda and subsist only by the name of their caste meet, they cannot form an assembly for settling the sacred law. When ignorant men partaking of the quality of darkness declare a certain act as right, without knowing what right means, the sin of that act falls increased 100-fold upon those who propound it. This is a really good one. I really like this one. What ignorant man partaking of the quality of darkness declare a certain act as right, without knowing what right means. Okay, so So that's going to be sinful, right? But who propounds it gets 100 times the reaction of that sin. In other words, you know, if they come up with it and they follow it, you get the reaction for it. But if you propound it as a philosophy, you get 100 times. So that's why one should be very careful about coming up with stuff that's not exactly supported by Scripture.
Yeah,
the mode of darkness, yes. Well, it says here, partaking of the quality of darkness.
Okay.
Like that. So. Yeah, but I mean, partaking, you know, like you have your noon repast or something, partake of it. So take a little ignorance on the side. You know. All that which is most efficacious for securing supreme bliss has been thus declared to you. A Brahman who does not fall off from that obtains the most excellent state. Right? So in other words, how it all, you know, what is the supreme position and how to decide law that's not, a detail is not exactly covered. Because he's given all the laws, but you might have some certain combination or some certain situation where it becomes hard to understand. So that means then you have an assembly take care of that. Conclusion of the sacred law. Thus did that worshipable deity disclose to me, through a desire of benefiting mankind, this whole most excellent secret of the sacred law. Right? So the worshipable deity is Lord Brahma. Let every Brahmana, concentrating his mind fully recognize in the self all things, both the real and the unreal, for he who recognizes the universe in the self does not give his heart to unrighteousness. Right? So if you're fully recognized in the self, means you see the Lord everywhere, you see the super soul everywhere. Right? So then if he sees everything in the self, and the self in all things, then he's not going to do things improperly. He's not going to do improper action. Right? So that's the simplest thing. If you just follow that, you'll actually do everything right. Does that make sense? So that's how devotee, even if he doesn't know all the details, because whatever he's doing is to please the Lord, it's actually right. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
But if he makes up a philosophy on why his following a particular, you know, how you say, non-Vedic elements is important, then that falls back to the previous verses. Then it starts to have problems. Or meaning is that you're seeing everything in connection to the Lord and actually acting on that platform, you know, free from material considerations, then it'll always be good. One never has to worry. Right? Riti, in the self means in the super soul, and both the real and unreal refers to the spiritual material. So you have both that, the real and unreal. But it also can mean the real, meaning that it's actually the Lord is there. The unreal is that you think it's something not connected to the Lord. Right? Because material, so when we say material world, we means you're looking at the external energy and thinking it's not connected with the Lord. Right? If I see something and I think I can enjoy this, that's illusion. The thing exists, but the concept is material. But you see the thing and you think, this is something I can engage in the Lord's service. That's real. Right? So one's unreal, this is real. So that's also the real and unreal. So the spiritual world, material world, and how the world here applies, how that actually works.
Maharaj, still somebody with the proper consciousness, the spiritual consciousness, they won't see matter as effulgent like in the spiritual world. They won't see the external energy as...
No, means, but the point that's attractive about it, that's the Lord. Mm-hmm. But what it is they're seeing this reflection and they're thinking that it's the matter itself, when it's actually the Lord that is causing that. That attractiveness is the Lord. He's Madan. Right? Means it's not the external energy is attractive. It's not Madan. You know, it's even as one's going out, we see as Gopal Kumar, when we get into that. Yeah, I'm not sure when that comes next year. Yeah, Brihad Bhagavatam, I'm not sure if it's in the first volume, but it means the one where he's going through all the universes and all that.
That's not the first
one. Okay, that's the later one, because there's two parts.
Yeah.
Okay. So then when he's going through, when he's going out of the universe, you have all the layers. Each one's 10 times bigger than the other. When you get to the last one, which is just Pradhan, the deity there is Mohini Murti. It's not Maya Devi, it's Mohini Murti. You know, because Maya Devi you might ignore, but Mohini is the Lord. And so as you're going by, because one, to get that far means you have to be a very special personality. So then Mohini invites, you want to come, and I think I forget who they're worshipping. Mohini is doing this Buddha and like that, and she invites, you want to come and join us and all that. So Gopa Kumara, you know, no, it's okay. It just keeps going.
It's okay to refuse the Lord.
Yeah. Okay. Both the conclusions of scripture on the condition of living entities subjective material desires are based on the mind. Right? Concentrating his mind fully, recognizing the self, all things, both the real and unreal, because it's the mind, it's the one that decides how you want to see things. Right? Whether you want to see it in devotional service or not. Intelligence is just through what it is that's there. And then according to what is your interpretation, that's how it will be seen. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Unrighteousness is that opposed to the Vedic version. The self alone, right, so Vedic version is devotional service. That's the main. The self alone is the multitude of the gods. Right? The universe rests on the self, for the self produces the connection of these embodied spirits with action. So here again, self is super soul. So this is conclusion of the sacred law. Right, because we generally think, you know, the varnashram means it's just all these rules and that. There are rules, but the point is this is the conclusion, that's what they're for. Because as it opened, right, that's one of the rules in Mimamsa, is you see how the book opens, you see how it closes. Right, so it opened with the point that we want to know varnashram in connection with the Supreme Lord. Right? It's not that they don't know Varnashram. They don't know they don't know Daiva Varnashram. Right? So that's the opening of the book. And now this is the closing of the book. Right? So you can understand the book is about how to regulate your life so that you can be engaged in the Lord's service. So from that you can understand that's what the book is for. Right? It may be because it's going into a particular subject matter and focusing on the rules of engagement, right? How you're acting, then one could get distracted by that and think it's just all this mundane kind of stuff. Because many will say, "Oh, Manu, that's not for us. It's another, you know, other ages, or we don't follow that, or we're above that, or this and that." But the point is this is Daiva Varnashram. Right? You could follow it not as Daiva Varnashram, just as Varnashram. But the point is to follow it in connection with the Lord. Right? So in other words, where it's giving recommendation, because these are your best and most nicest results. That's where you get your strongest effects. And what it's not recommending, that's what's going to distract you from devotional service. Vritti. The super soul is the original source and potency behind the demigods. The living entity desires to perform an activity so as to achieve a particular result. And the Lord may sanction that result or not, depending on the living entity's karma, which is a result of the previous activities. If sanctioned, then the three modes of nature through the demigods give the ability to the living entity for performing the desired activity and deliver to the living entity the deserved results. Right? So the self produces the connection of these embodied spirits with action. Right? So in other words, the jivas that are within the bodies and their actions, it's the super soul who sees that it all comes together. Though it's being done through the multitude of the gods. Right? So the whole universe is resting on the Lord. The functioning of the universe is resting on the Lord. The living entities getting the results of their actions is resting on the Lord. Right? And we notice here there's no place where it says he has to do it, right? So that's these, you know, these other philosophies, they'll have a tendency to think, you know, I did the work, he has to give the results. No, it's resting on him, so it's up to him. Let him meditate on the ether as identical with the cavities of the body. Right? Because ether means space. Right? So all the cavities in the body, anywhere there's emptiness, that's ether. On the wind is identical with the organs of motion and touch. Right? Because touch is by air. So and movement is by air. It means you move your arm, we'll say the muscle does it, but that's because the life air pushes on it. The muscle is just the machine. Just like, let's say we have, you know, some kind of a thing that works, it has a
piston.
Some kind of a piston thing like that. Let's say it has oil on it and that, like that. But there's something that pushes, I mean, and it moves the arm, right? So you can say, no, the piston's moving the arm. But actually it's not, it's whatever's moving. The piston is what moves the arm. So it's the life airs, and that's what moves the muscles. The muscle is moving the arm, yes, but what moves the muscle? Right, so that's the airs. Right? So on the wind is identical with the organs of motion and touch. On the excellent light is the same with the digestive organs, his sight and sight. Right? It means your eyes work on fire. Right? Because it means fire is form. Form and color, so you can only see because the eyes contain that. Right? They're able to deal with that. You know, and digestion is fire. Mm-hmm. On water is the same with the corporal fluids. Right? It means whatever fluids are in the body, then that's water. On the earth is the same with the solid parts of his body. Right? On the moon as one with the internal organ, with the mind. On the quarters of the horizon, as one with his sense of hearing, right? It means your four directions as the... On Vishnu, as one with his power of motion. On Hara, as the same with his strength. In other words, you're able to move by Vishnu, by Hara, you're able to have strength. On Agni, as identical with his speech. On Mitra, as identical with his excretions. And on Prajapati, as one with his organs of generation. Let him know the supreme male Purusha to be the sovereign ruler of them. Smaller than small, bright like gold and perceptible by the intellect only when in a state of deep, in a state of sleep, like abstraction. Means in meditation. Some call him Agni, others Manu, the Lord of creatures, others Indra, others the vital air, and again others eternal Brahman. He pervades all created beings in the five forms, and constantly makes them by means of birth, growth, and decay, revolve like the wheels of a chariot. Right? Beings in the five forms means in the five gross elements. He who thus recognizes the self through the self, means the self, the small self through the big self, in all created beings, becomes equally minded towards all, and enters the highest state, Brahman. Right? So again here, the point is you have to see everyone properly, equally on the spiritual platform. Vritti, by relays and acting upon one's constitutional position as soul in relation to the Supreme Soul, one attains the transcendental realm. And twice for a man who recites these institutes, revealed by Manu, will be always virtuous in conduct and will reach whatever condition he desires. Okay. So that's the end of Manu Samhita. Any other questions? Okay, Haribol.
There's another program.
Maharaj. Oh, okay, he's starting. Okay, cool. Anything else?
Are there other, through other sages, this same Manusamhita is received, or Manusamhita means just coming from Bhrigu?
Oh no, Manusamhita as the book, the teachings of Man, you might say, are Varnashram. He sees Narad Muni, because he says in the beginning he taught it to all the 10 sons. So this is Bhrigu speaking. But then we see in Bhagavatam that's Narad Muni speaking. Like that. So he gives it in 5 chapters. 2 chapters he goes through Varna Dharma and Ashram Dharma. And then 3 chapters he's talking about, you know, the kind of the social and the transcendentalist and everything like that. So much of the time it's not even connected. Those other 3 chapters are connected with Varna Ashram. But as we see, if you see from Manu, the point is to come to the transcendental position. So by following it, you don't come to the transcendental position, means you're not actually understanding the purpose of it. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's 2 that I know of. But much of the time you hear others, you know, speaking about it or something. But, you know, and what this, Daksha would be more the Karmakandya. You know, because he just sees things by that. Shiva's, you know, means somehow or another, how, I'm not sure, you know, or it's arranged that his daughter's married to Lord Shiva. But he considers that since he's his son-in-law, he's the senior one. Right? You know, because, you know, age and, you know, his performance of ritualistic sacrifices, you know,
social
relationship. You know, these kind of things, but he doesn't understand that the position of Shiva is higher, and also the element of, what do you call it? Transcendence. He doesn't understand these things. You know, plus the thing is they're brothers, so he shouldn't be putting that much of a trip on it. You know, like that. So, though, I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure that Shiva's not senior. Yeah. I think the Kumaras are the oldest, right? They're the first, because they're always taken as the senior. Most. And then of the 4, then Sanat Kumar is the senior.
And then Lord Brahma got angry.
Yeah, and then that was Shiva, okay. Then after that, then I guess the other brothers. So, you know, whatever it is, but whatever. Daksha, because of that, so he's only seeing the ritual, he's seeing the secondary, but he's not seeing actually the primary position. Somehow or another, you know, so he's missing.
Property.
Yeah, property. So then it was arranged, since he sees like that, then Sati arranged that she would appear in another way, so that he's not connected. Right? Same person just appeared then, therefore it's the daughter of the Himalayas, as opposed to Daksha. Mm-hmm.
Shiva's a whole other tattva though, so he's seen her in that
sense. Yeah, of course. I'm saying very soon, but that's the problem, he's just not seeing like that. Yes.
Mars, how did Prabhupada extract the 4 regular principles from
Manusamhita? I mean, it's pretty standard, but I mean, it would be here. Because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also talks about it. So it's not that he started it. You know, some kind of say that he started it's not there in the Vedics. You know, because they hear about the Kshatriyas, you know, it means they might be taking intoxication, or a woman approaches them, they might, you know, spend some time with them, but it's not any woman. It can only be a qualified woman. You know, so you have all these different things, so they get the idea, or the Kshatriya might be eating meat or different things, but that's only according to sacrifice. So it's not considered sin. So in other words, all these things are considered sin if they're done in a particular consideration. But just being done for sense gratification, that doesn't work, you know. So it's not a standard. And anyway, even they're allowed under certain conditions. Manu doesn't recommend them, you know, because he says whoever has followed him has run into trouble for that, you know. Shukracharya had trouble, Nala had trouble, Yudhishthira had trouble, you know, I mean, look what happened to Vijitravirya. You know, so it's just, it just didn't work out good for people. So the point is therefore, it's just not followed. And that might be said, but Brahmins don't, and Vaishnavas are Brahmins. Because the only way we have an entrance into Varnashram is through the Brahminical standard of being a devotee. You know, it's not based on our great material qualifications.
There was a statement towards the end, Maharaj, that we have to know the Vedas, but according to the system which is not repugnant to the Vedas.
Yes.
We used to interpret it that you can do anything if you do it in the association of devotees.
Basically, it means you can do anything, but the point is the anything should be what's recommended. You know what I'm saying? So one is you have to see that the purpose is ultimately for Krishna. But the same, and that means if it's pure devotion, means it's favorable to Krishna. So that's how you judge. If it's favorable to Krishna, then it works. But how do you know it's favorable to Krishna except by authority? Right. So therefore, again, it goes back to, because as we sang, is praman is the medium by which you know something. Right. Prameya is what is known. What was the other one? Who knows?
Pramata.
Pramata.
Subject.
Yeah, so then the point is the subject and the object, they're connected through praman, right? So it's the for the Vedas, therefore one is able to connect and one is able to see, like that. So that's what it does, but the point is if it's favorable for Krishna, then it's fine to perform, right? So that way, if you understand this principle, and you understand, you know, the trinada pisu ni trina, then like this, you have the proper understanding of how to do and what's the proper etiquette. But the point is, this means you have to follow that consistently, not, you know, pick and choose. If you're going to pick and choose, then there's more rules. Like that.
In relation to the last about the four regular principles, in the first canto of Bhagavatam, doesn't Preacher Maharaj declare them to Kali? You can stay there.
That's true. He says, well, those things are going on, that's what you can do. So they're standard. It's a pretty standard thing.
You know. It says those four, and where gold is ordered.
Yeah. Yeah, because it mentioned, remembers, what was the thing? Goldsmith?
Yeah. One steals rubies or jewels or
diamonds. Yeah, one steals that, then he becomes a goldsmith. So in other words, it's also just, it's not considered a pious birth. As we see as before when it mentioned that if they're caught, you know, stealing or dealing badly and stuff like that with stealing the customer's gold and not providing properly the punishment was quite severe. You know, because this is gold's very expensive, and this is where people's life savings are, and you know, so many important things are invested in gold, so if they play around with that, they completely mess up people's lives. Like I remember, you know, just as an example, it wasn't gold, but the principle, because you're investing in gold, that someone got married, and at the marriage, they were given, you know, this nice set of pearls. And so later on, when there was some difficulty and they needed some money, they went to, you know, sell the pearls. But then they found that they weren't real. So that's not worth anything. So that means you think you have an investment, but you don't. So you can't plan, you can't do anything. So that's why it's very delicate. Because the point is they're in that position from stealing. You know?
Not just a typical Vaishya.
No, it's not just a typical.
It's not like banking.
It's not like banking. Like, you know, banking is not considered ideal. That doesn't mean that you were unideal to get there. You know, the goldsmith itself is not considered specifically as bad. But to get there, then that wasn't good. But also just they're always thinking about too much gold and this and that. Mm-hmm.
also on that point that we were discussing yesterday, if one takes birth in like a lower animal form, does one have to progress one after another?
Means one after another, whatever is goes with that. In other words, it's not that you go in and you have to go through all 8,400,000. It's that for any specific, how do you say, sinful activity, there's a specific set.
Yeah. For each sin you committed, there's a corresponding.
Yeah, yeah, there's corresponding, yeah. So then, you know, if you have a multiplicity of sins, then you have a variety of things. So depending upon what it is, either you'll get a choice or, you know, they'll work it out for you. But you're going to go through all those.
And we hear that for killing a cow, one takes birth once as a cow for every hair on the cow's body.
Yeah.
Do you know, is that any reference for that in the scripture?
It's in money.
Did we go through that? Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's there. So yeah. In other words, if an animal is killed not for sacrifice,
right,
then for every hair on their body, you'll be born in that sweet and killed.
Yeah.
Like that. But if they're killed according to sacrifice, then there's no sin.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you won't take birth that one time, and by whoever it is was in the body of the cow, now they'll be the human and they'll sacrifice you. That will be there. But you don't have to go through the sinful reaction.
Right.
Yeah, no, that monomer. You know, he talks about proper and forbidden food and stuff.
Right.
Yes, Mark. So Manu Samhita is the main book about Dharma Shastra.
Manu is the main book, yes, Manu is the main. But there, I think there's like 40 different things, but they're all little this, that. And you don't hear of them much. 20, I think, are more prominent. I think Rupa Goswami mentions 20. But Prabhupada mentions, we specifically only deal with three. Manu, Parasara, and Yajnavalkya. So Parasara specifically deals with Kali Yuga. Is it much different than what's in here?
No.
Yeah. So in other words, he won't talk about Niyoga and stuff like that so much. Yeah, in other words, things that don't apply in this age, he doesn't talk about. But basically it's the same, because anything that was different or added would have been already put in here. Right? So we didn't see hardly anything, so that means it's basically this. And Yajnavalkya?
He gets into more details about physiology of the body, and how things work, and creation of the elements, and brings all those levels.
Okay. Okay, so he also mentions, see the body like that. You know, he's saying all these things. In other words, it's the process of putting everything back into the elements. That means we're not the body.
Yes.
We're not the body, so all the spaces in the body go back to the ether, the skin and motion goes back into the air, you know, the digestion and the sight goes back into fire. The liquids of the body go back into the water, and the solid parts of the body go back into the earth. So then that just leaves the soul. Right? And so then the soul then surrenders unto the Lord. So that's the process. It's the standard yoga process. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is there mention of atonement for murder? The murderer has to carry around the corpse of the person who's murdered?
I never heard of a corpse carrying around. Yeah, I never. I mean, because the point is that the person, that's his body, so then it needs to be burnt and proper rites. So why, you know, why he now has to be, you know, drag around with this guy.
That it was connected to him so that he would perceive the, you know, the effect of the sin.
No, I've never heard of that.
Didn't read that anyway.
No. Yeah. Sometimes boys get fired up. You know, they might get branded with a certain thing. That might be there. But branding, that's one thing. I've never heard of carrying a corpse around. Brahmachari, then if he hasn't followed Brahmacharya properly, he might sacrifice a donkey. And then the skin of that donkey he'll wear. That I've heard of, but I haven't heard of that. Well, you know, it means why would you carry around the dead person? Because the dead person has his rights, you know. You know, it's like, yeah. What about his death rights and all those things? I mean, there's all these fine details, but those aren't so important for the Vaishnava. Yeah, you can see it would be less applicable. But
so Maharaj, now that we finish, are we going to start another book?
At this point, I think, because I'm worried about Jaivadharma right now. We might do classes with Jaivadharma. Because we're only, I think, on the 9th chapter.
Yes.
You know, we have 40 chapters. I think it'll speed up as it goes, you know, because always more discussions in the beginning. Mm-hmm. As it goes, it'll go quicker. And especially at the end, when I'm talking about Prima Bhakti and all that. It's just nice stuff. So what's your opinion? You know, wow. You know, so it goes more quickly. That we'll start to. It's just a question of how we do the two. Do we do, you know, morning and evening, or the two morning ones, and the evening ones, the other one, or?
Logic.
Hmm?
Logic, and a second sadarshan in the evening. might be quite difficult.
Oh, you mean we do that now? Okay, so, yeah, because Jaivadharma would be easier to work with now. Okay, so after lunch, the brain is not functioning as such a technical. The reflective power of the intelligence isn't so great. It's slightly dulled by the steam off the halava or something.
Yeah. Are we going to be studying any niti, Chanakya niti?
That'll come eventually.
Yeah.
It's just, problem is that you find more that can work on the philosophical things. You find less that can work on the opera vidya. There's plenty of people with, you know, love to and have put together books and all that, but it's not something we care to use. Because as we see Manu here, you know, if it doesn't stick to actually the transcendental understanding, it's not how it's supposed to be. So many times those, you know, scholars get distracted by, you know, the information and miss the point of its proper connection.
Maharaj, there's Shastra Chakshus. Did I hear you ever mention any other?
Shastra Chakshus.
Bhakti Anuchana.
It means this class is the Bhakti Anuchana. It's technically supposed to be part of it, because you want to get it. So we're revising it so that it fits within the 3 years. So this class would be the Bhakti Anuchana, and it would be part of the whole Shastra Chakshus course. But it's a different degree than the morning study. All that together, then you get the Bachelor of Divinity.
Did I ever hear you mention term Brahmacharya?
Yes, that's the last 3 years.
Oh, okay.
The next 3 years is Darshan Chakshus, and then the next after that is Vedanta Chakshus.
One critique I've heard of Manu Samhita, I just don't know how well informed it is, but they were saying that it's based on birth, or caste is based on birth exclusively. I mean, there's no point where that confusion could come out. Isn't Manu quite clear?
No, I mean, he's never mentioned that. He's mentioned that somewhere?
No.
He doesn't mention it at all. He's talking about guna and karma.
Yeah.
Straight.
No, but it's popular within ISKCON. People just dismiss.
They always dismiss. Because who's read it?
Yeah.
Who's read the text? I know one devotee who read it, you know, like 20 years ago. He's still confused. I just bumped into him about 3 days ago, and he says, you know, he wants to discuss something. He's read, and he didn't, you know, like this. It's the same thing we discussed 20 years ago. So it's the same.
People might get that conclusion from the discussion of Brahmana, mother, father, plus such and such, and they understand it.
Yeah, no, all it's just saying is what the natures are, because it follows it back.
That's
You know, that means you go through it. And that means if you analyze that, then you can see what the nature is and what it does.
Yeah. Are there any passages that have been mistranslated?
In this one, basically, you could say the philosophical points, unless it's very direct and clear in the text, they don't get the subtleties. So it's weak, you could say. But like in here where it talks about the self and this and that, then they can kind of like catch it, you know? And generally when it's, sometimes they use synonyms in areas that may make it sound like it's socially not fair. Mm-hmm. Like they use that term despicable a lot. It means just despicable means it's not Krishna conscious, that's all. Uh-huh. Yeah, because you say despicable barbarians means they're not God conscious, you know, they, you know, get on their boat and arrive somewhere else, go in, you know, lay waste to everything, you know, kill everybody, rape the women, take all the food and, you know, steal the sheep and then leave. That's called despicable, right? You know, but, you know what I'm saying? So, it means you just go back a few hundred years and basically that's what Europe was. You know, the only ones that are a bit more culture were the Romans. Right, and all those despicable tribes, they didn't get along so well, and eventually they took over Rome, they conquered Rome. Mm-hmm. And it's the Visigoths, right, they took over.
They built the wall to try and keep them off.
That's up north, so they didn't even bother with those ones. Just, they were too wild, so they just built a wall. Right?
Hadrian's wall.
Yeah, I was reading when Thakur was mentioning that for Dharma Shastras, one would be well to read Manusmita, Mahabharata, Ramayana.
Yeah, because that's the, because Mahabharata gives the rules. Uh-huh. I mean, Manu gives the rules, and Mahabharata, Ramayana, you see how it's applied. Mm-hmm. So everything that you want to know, an application is there, right? So it's standard, but the point is people take it by birth anyway. It means they're saying jumping up and down about birth. But then, okay, it's Indian, but what's wrong with India? Oh, but Indian's not good. We're Americans. Isn't that by birth? You understand? So it's totally contradictory. Those ones who are always worried that Manu is all about the birth and this and that are the ones that are totally worried about birth. Otherwise, why would you worry about it? Kids, it doesn't even come up as a conversation because they don't worry about it, right? You only bring up in a conversation what's important. You know what I'm saying? So for them, it's, you know, if you're born in America, then you're all right. You know, and everybody should do what Americans do, because Americans are leading the world, and whatever they do, that's balanced and modern and democratic, and, you know, like this. And so, if you know, somewhere else you bring that up, then, that's very European, or that's very Asian, or, you know, something like that. You know, so what's that? That's birth.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, birth does have a meaning. But the point is if someone acts outside of that, they're accepted according to that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But they have to act in that way.
Right.
You know. You know, so you can't not act in a Brahminical way and then criticize the Brahminical platform. You know what I'm saying? Manu does describe that position. So it's a, you know, they'll always say this, but who's read it? Who even knows what it is?
Yeah. But, I observed in reading Mahabharata that like entire sections of Manusmriti and Samhita are duplicated there. Like, for example, the eight types of weddings, and it's just like a discourse. You know?
It is.
They interrupt the narrative almost to give like all the philosophy.
Yeah. Well, there's 25,000 verses are on actually the pastimes of the Pandavas. 75,000 verses are all the side stories that are actually
the Bharata dynasty.
Yeah, but they're actually there to bring out all the what should be done and everything. And we see again and again, Narad Muni comes and visits Yudhishthira. He asks him a list of questions that are all the rules of practical application of Dharma Shastra. You know, is he doing it in his kingdom?
Yeah.
You know. So he just asked him that. Then Yudhishthira, you know, the whole thing with the yaksha, you know, at the lake. Mm-hmm. It's all about that. When they go and sit with Bhishma Dev, and he's explaining it.
Right.
You know, so it's again and again being brought up. This Mahabharata was meant as the essence of all the books of the Vedas in one place that's in a form that everybody would be willing to read and you know, naturally practice. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maharaj, I noticed in the temple shops that we have here, there's a couple of versions of Mahabharata. Is there one that you recommend, a version that you recommend?
If you want the whole thing, then Ganguly. And then I think there's something that they kind of refresh the English. Means, in other words, it's not 1830s Indian English, it's, you know, how you say, 1970s or 80s Indian English. So if you call that refreshing, then...
I like the original.
Yeah, I stick to Ganguly. So Ganguly is there, but that's, I don't know that they sell that.
It's available in a PDF format.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's free, it's public.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, as long as you appreciate, you know, like, kind of like older English, it's 1830s English. You know, so it's nice like that.
Like the old Pandavas?
Yeah, sometimes. When they're talking, they'll use that. If it's describing, it won't use it. But when they talk like that. But Krishna Dharma, means the others, what they do is they selected stories, mainly on the Pandavas, right? Because this, you know, yeah, as we said, only a quarter of the Mahabharata is directly on them. So he'll specifically stick to those, but he'll take the chronology, but when they're told in the Mahabharata, he may rearrange the order. So something is told over here, he'll tell it later along with something else that he feels it connects nicely to. So in other words, those are storytelling. It says as told by. It doesn't say that it's just... So he puts it together how he likes, keeps what stories he likes. Because there's also in the Mahabharata, some start right at the beginning. Some start with the Shantanu, and some start just with the Pandavas. So generally, devotees generally start with the Pandavas. You know, so he gives less stories, but more detail. Purna Pragya gives all the stories very minimal detail, like that. And I'm not sure if there's somebody else. But we use Ganguly, but, you know, it's longer. If you want to just get a first time go through and get an understanding, then go with Krishna Dharma. But if you want to read more...
Ganguly summarizes the whole text in the first chapter anyway, the style.
That's there. I mean, that was, but that's Sutta. That's Sutta. Yeah. But it might not be enough if you want to, like that, but if you want to, yeah. But I'm saying if you just, because that's one volume, but if, you know, if you're happy with 12 volumes, then get going.
Thank you.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
jai.
Dhanatai Kaurava Premana. First time we went through the whole thing.
First time?
In the class, because mostly we've only done.